shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians, called to a higher level of understanding, will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries, welcoming you to another one of our first of the month live Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're being heard tonight over WWCR on 4.840 megahertz and 5.890 megahertz. That's transmitter 3 and transmitter 4. And we're being heard on WVCQ at 7.490 megahertz. Both of those shortwave stations have streams from the internet to listen to the program, or you can go to our website, which is kingidentity.com, kingidentity.com. Go to our radio page, and you'll see a schedule there, and you can hit listen live under the Kingdom Concepts broadcast. If you would like to participate in tonight's program, which should be an interesting one, we invite you to call our toll-free number, 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAWS-RACE. I'll repeat that, 877-924-7722. When I was in college, the best professor I had was not somebody who just lectured to us and wanted to indoctrinate us with his viewpoint, but instead he gave us different viewpoints and tried to make us think. Well, I'm hoping that tonight's program will make the audience want to think. We have a book that we carry called The Biblical Case for Polygamy, and our guest is the author of that book tonight, and we'll be discussing his new book, which is called The Family Abbey. He's a man who's been on our broadcast before, when we had the 15-minute broadcast, and I think you'll find what he has to say very interesting and also scholarly. I would like to welcome to the broadcast Pastor Wesley Stivers.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. How are you this evening?
Oh, doing okay. How are you?
Well, the reason why I ask is we've got snow on the ground. How are things where you're at?
Oh, we have snow and sleet coming down now, and it's 12 degrees and supposed to drop down to 4 degrees.
That's the case in most of the country, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a bad winter. I'm looking forward to spring. My secretary warned me that the power may go out tonight because of the ice and everything on the lines and trees toppling and stuff. I hope that's not the case, but anyway, we have electricity right now.
Well, I think this is a great night for folks to be sitting next to the fireplace and have their radio on and sit in for a discussion. I appreciate the opportunity that you've given me to share some thoughts with your folks. I'm particularly interested in, anyone that's interested in these topics, but in particular, folks that are involved in the homeschooling movement, and that's something that we've been a part of for many years. The concept behind the book, The Family Abbey, is the notion of home churching. And that is something that homeschooling folks have been involved in for quite a few years. And the concern that I have in recent months in terms of what's been transpiring in world events as well as the signs in the heavens telling us that perhaps the end is near, at least the end of something is near, I think it's important to get this information out to people. We as Christians need to learn the foundations of social order, We need to understand how God's work in the earth is accomplished through His people. We need to understand the institutions of society, where they have failed us, where they have succeeded. And one of the things that I've done as a historian is to look into obscure facts of history to find out how it was that our ancestors survived the catastrophes that happened to them in their time. And one of the things that I discovered in... Go ahead.
I was going to say that this book is the bigger concept. Your other book dealt purely with plural marriage or polygamy, and while that's addressed in this book as a part of reestablishing the kingdom, your overall concept is the patriarchal home and the building of the kingdom, the restoration of the kingdom. So the concept is broader, and you bring in various topics in this new book.
Yes. And, of course, I should mention for the benefit of your audience, I'm not a practicing polygamist, and I don't profess that to have a family abbey along the lines that I described in my book. These subjects I pursue as an interested scholar and trying to conceptually understand the kind of society that existed in biblical times, how our more recent ancestors, such as the Puritans, tried to understand the scriptures and tried to apply it in their society, tried to find the areas where they failed, and then to look at our own society today and ask the question, well, are these things that we find in the Bible still pertinent for us? And if so, how do we implement them in our society? So, you know, just relying upon, you know, an objective understanding of the scriptures, we think that when we look around at what I call churchianity, and that's a term that's been around for a long time, but for many years I thought that maybe the problem that I saw in churches was just from the fact that I was in the wrong church. And so I have attended many different types of churches from many different movements and denominations over the years, and I've examined many other religious movements, even though maybe I haven't attended their churches, because a lot of churches, even though they may wear a different name, will often be very similar to other kinds of religious movements. And so once you understand their basic doctrine, you begin to see a certain pattern in their church government and their behavior and their doctrine and their value system, so on. So anyway, but to short the story there, I began to realize some years ago that it wasn't really the problem of which church I was attending. It was the problem of the idea of church itself. And that's the shocking conclusion that I guess I came to, because for a lot of us, we are in such a habit of getting up on Sunday morning, putting on our Sunday best, and then going someplace to hear someone preach a sermon and sing songs to us, or we participate in the song service, whatever the case may be. And we're so used to that routine that it's a shocking thing to propose that maybe we should not look upon the church as the primary focus of our spiritual service to God. So that is why I introduced the idea of home churching. And certainly back in the ancient times, I guess I better qualify that, how ancient I want to talk about here, we might call the post-Roman times, during the early part of the Middle Ages, or what we often call the Dark Ages, those were times when villages and places were cut off from other more cosmopolitan cities, and because of, as we're discovering, various invasions, we've heard in, that there was a change in the climate at about the 6th century, 5th and 6th centuries, where the climate became much colder. That was an incentive for the tribes in Eastern Europe to cross the Rhine into the Roman Empire because the Russian steppes were getting too cold and the people were looking for a warmer climate. And, of course, history notes these as the barbarian invasions. Of course, those of us of our different persuasion recognize the providence of God in that, in bringing what we believe were the descendants of Israel into the center stage of history. But aside from that, there were other catastrophes that happened. The climate changed. There was famines. There was said to have been a comet during the middle part of the 6th century that passed through close to Earth at that time and is believed to have caused volcanic eruptions and certainly signaled a time of plague and famine that came upon the world at that time. So it was truly a dark age in the sense of losing centuries of human history. And during those times, Christianity survived, especially in the Celtic lands. And when I speak of the Celtic lands, I'm speaking of the British Isles in particular. The Celtic peoples inhabited much larger areas than that, but at that time, that was where the outposts of Christianity survived. Thomas Cahill is a recent historian that wrote a book entitled How the Irish Saved Civilization, and that was that the gospel was preserved and the places of learning were preserved in Ireland, and Ireland sent missionaries back to the European continent. But the kind of Christianity that survived there is very different than the kind of Christianity that existed in the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire relied upon, of course, the idea of bishops and eventually the Pope. It was a very structured kind of church. But in the Celtic lands, it was very family-oriented. And so one of the things that aggravated the conflict between the Celtic church and the Latin variety was that in the Celtic lands, a man could be a bishop and still be married, and he could have children. And in addition to that, the leaders of the Christianity in Celtic lands, they could ordain their successors, they could ordain bishops and send out missionaries with just one bishop presiding over the ordination, whereas in the Roman system, it required three bishops to be present in order for there to be anyone ordained into the ministry. So what happened in Celtic lands is that there was a succession that was not only apostolic and episcopal, but it was also patriarchal, because the fathers could pass the spiritual torch to their sons, and that was why Christianity was preserved in those lands, even in the times when it was cut off from the rest of the Roman Empire, which was fracturing during those centuries. These people didn't adopt that form of Christianity just out of necessity, but it was out of principle, because it was a family-oriented society and believed that the Christian faith was a family-oriented religion. And so these are the kinds of pieces of information that I try to bring out in my book and try to tie together into a bigger tapestry of understanding of how our Christian ancestors were able to survive the times of catastrophe in their time. And of course, we look around the world today and we say, oh my goodness, it's got to be the end of the world. But really, there have been many ends of the world during the history of mankind. And of course, for every one of us, at some point in time, we die, and so that's the end of our world as far as our presence in this life. And so we need to get a perspective on these things and realize that we have a responsibility to pass the torch on to the next generation, and we need to try our best to come up with an understanding of what true Christianity is all about, and then set forth those institutions that would make it happen. I'm going to pause real quick there just to see if there was something you wanted to interject before.
Yes, in the Bible, specifically in the Old Testament, the New Testament being a commentary on the Old, you have the patriarchal system. And early Christianity was serious Christianity. We're told that the apostles turned the whole world upside down. But today, it seems like it's primarily entertainment. I often say that some people go to nightclubs for their entertainment and other people go to church. It's not serious Christianity. It's not following his laws, restoring the kingdom, or anything like that. The people's attitude has departed from Christianity, and thus they get the type of preachers and church system that they have today.
Yes, there's a section in my book where I talk about the rhetoricians. These were the men in the Roman Empire, also known as the sophists, that were the great orators of those times. And Christianity originally was a elder/father-oriented religion in the sense of positing spiritual authority and in men of righteous character, whereas later when the attendance began to grow and Christianity began to achieve more of a public profile, the people wanted to hear the polished speakers, the orators, in the pulpits, just like they were used to hearing them in the rostrums of their courts and public orations.
We have a caller
California,
Encinita, California. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mike. It's an interesting conversation between you and the author there. I just want to mention that I used to like to hear Pastor Sheldon Emery and Pastor Bob. I don't hear them anymore. You used to play them all the time. And that was that's some real good Bible doctrine there those guys used to give.
You're talking to Pastor Bob Hallstrom.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of retired, but I'm going to try to play some more of his broadcasts combined. It's a little bit difficult because previously we had a 15-minute broadcast on the weekdays and a half-hour broadcast on the weekends, and it takes a lot of editing, and I will try to do that. Emery,
another thing, Mike.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not in Encinitas. So I'm in Ramona. But I heard that the current pastor that is doing the broadcast recently, I heard that he was in San Diego. Where is the church that he's at here?
You're talking about last month's live broadcast? Or are you talking
about... The regular broadcast that you have during the...
Oh, okay.
The week.
That's Pastor Bertrand Compre, and he did live in San Diego, and he was the attorney for both the city of San Diego at one time and the county of San Diego at another time. So he died in 1983. So,
yeah, well, is the church still there or anything like that? Or?
No, a lot of people, including myself, have moved out of California because of the type of society it's become out there.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm right in the middle of it.
There was another church in that area, and the pastor died. Another one moved off somewhere up north. It's just a small remnant now, and you'll find some in a few cities everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy the broadcast every week. I try to be here and listen. I love the opening. The opening is like, you know, you just get it with the boom, boom and all that. I don't know. I just like to listen. I'm a radiophile, you know?
Well, we appreciate you listening, and we have all the broadcasts on CD that are available, plus many other sermons.
Thanks a lot, Mike. That's all I got. It's a good conversation tonight. You guys, keep it up.
Well, thank you for calling.
All right, you're welcome. Bye.
Lindy give out the phone number in case anybody else would like to join the broadcast tonight? 877-924-7722. 877-YAWS-RACE. 877-924-7722. That's a toll-free number. If some of our foreign listeners would like to call, I know that the toll-free number doesn't work, but they can call directly at 678-949-5091. That can also be called by anybody domestically. I think he brought up a point that something that applies to tonight's discussion, and that's that there is a small remnant everywhere. It's just a few people who have come out from among them and be separate, as it says. Would you like to comment on that as it relates to your book?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that Jesus, in his prophecies, talked about the falling away, and he talked about the idea of the remnant. And usually that refers to people that are going to follow their faith on the basis of principle rather than on what's expedient or convenient at the time. And certainly when you were talking about churches being places of entertainment, I think that that's a lot of what people are looking for today. The pastor has to be funny. He has to be witty, and he has to be clever. He has to be upbeat and energetic. The people want groovy music, maybe a little bit of a drama thrown in there, and skits of various kinds and different kinds of programs and events of interest for the people in order to keep their interest and keep them coming back. And I don't think that that is what Christianity was really all about. Christianity was about a personal relationship with your Savior, and I think that, you know, that it gives witness to the fact that we've gone so far off track in our world today. It calls into question the very roots of this kind of religion that we've developed, certainly in the United States. Tremendous amounts of money and resources are expended on large church buildings, facilities, schools to basically emulate the public school systems with sport programs and all kinds of things that the churches have adopted. And of course, when you attend these churches, it's age segregated, so families, as soon as they step into the door, they're separated from one another. The children go into the various classes and youth church meetings that they have, and of course the older folks go into their age-appropriate events, and the families split up. And I think that, you know, the church talks about, the people in the churches today talk about strengthening the family, and I just don't see it. I see something sinister going on where they're tearing down the family. And so I really think that, yeah.
I was going to say there's no meat in what is taught in churches, either in the general worship service or in the Sunday schools, and that can be developed at home. We do have another caller from Selma, Alabama. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hi, Pastor Mike, and your guest. I forget his name, but I just wanted to call and tell you that my dad used to tease me. He would say that a man should have as many wives as he can find jobs for. And I don't know whether he was serious about that or not. But anyway, the main reason I wanted to call tonight is that you know, I'm in a position where I can move pretty much anywhere in the country. I've got a steady income and everything. But I've approached several different groups, and whenever I would approach them, I would explain that I'm free to move. I would like to be involved. I'd like to be active. I'd like to perhaps work with the ministry in some way or another free of charge, just be there and volunteer and whatever. And practically everywhere that I've tried to contact these people, I've been basically shown the door in a real hateful way, too. And my question is is there such a problem with wolves in sheep's clothing or whatever like that, where people have to be very careful? Or is there a reason why that these ministries are so hateful toward people that would like to join in and lend a helping hand?
Well, I can't answer that for every ministry, but there certainly are certain ministries that I consider wolves in sheep's clothing. And there are some good ones, but once again, it's a remnant. I had a friend of mine once tell me that we're the salt of the earth, and when you salt your food, you don't put it all in one pile. You know, you spread it around.
Yes.
That is, gives us an influence in our community with others of like mind who have ears to hear. I'll let Pastor Stivers comment on that question.
Well, I would encourage your owner, as I encourage everyone, to strongly consider what opportunities they have where they're at. And one of the emphases that I have in my book, The Family Abbey, is I at length explain the priesthood of the father in the home. And I think that this is the forgotten ministry, and it is the thing that it really is the foundation of a righteous society is the spiritual leadership of the father in the home. And I go a step further, not just a man leading his family in prayer or in Bible studies, but also administering the sacraments of the faith to his family. And this is a sore point for a lot of church leaders, is this idea that fathers can administer communion in their own homes to their families. This is a position I've taken and argued extensively in my book. And I think, I would encourage your caller, as I would all your listeners, to consider investigating this possibility that we need to return, the critical aspects of Christian worship and of Christian faith in the home, begin to rebuild right where we are at, and then let the opportunity present itself later as far as fellowshipping with other people of like mind.
Okay, well, thank you, sir. I appreciate your answer. Maybe, you know, good Lord willing, I can find, let me explain. I live alone. I don't have any real close family to speak of and all that, so I really don't have much opportunity to be the, you know, a leader of my family unit, but maybe with any kind of luck, one day I'll stumble upon something like a database that lists, identity type churches and, you know, maybe I can, who knows, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of them floating around out there that just, they don't draw a lot of attention to themselves for the obvious reason, but anyway, I do appreciate your thoughts.
Well, thank you for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely, yes. Well, I mean, this lends itself to another question. You know, obviously, not everyone is in a family context. We can still be involved in the lives of other Christian folks, and it doesn't necessarily need to be within the church context. We can have Christian friends, and you know, sometimes we know these people from work. Perhaps we know them through the bowling league or something that we might be participating in, and we can take our friendships to a deeper level and suggest getting together for a Bible study or for prayer and let things just kind of take its course from there. You know, I think
if I remember correctly, you quoted in the book how many people are contacted by friends and family to bring them into the faith, and I think it was 70%. You might comment.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, it was a little higher than that. The people involved in churchianity like to brag about their crusades and revival meetings and so forth as far as bringing people into the faith, but really, it was closer to 74%, I think, of all people that become Christians do so through the influence of family and friends. And so that is where the crux of the evangelistic work takes place. And I would suggest that if we just spent more time doing that, building relationships with people instead of participating in these very costly and time-consuming events that the churches put on, we would be far more effective in our witness for Christ. And, you know, this is the thing, it's kind of a complex that people have, that they want to start, everybody wants to start an organization for something. And sometimes you really just don't need to be thinking about starting an organization, you just need to, just get to know your neighbors and get to know the people that you cross paths with and try to build friendships, build relationships with those people. And it's not really that hard to do, and actually it can be quite fun. You just have to just meet people where they're at. You don't have to unload everything that you know on them all at once. You just find out what they think and share a little bit at a time.
We have another caller, Bill from Flat Grand Prairie, Texas. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Well, Brother Mike, my heart is enriched. You don't hear very many people talking about skits and drama and entertainment going on in the church these days. And I just wanted to encourage you folks to keep up the good work. I get excited when I hear the good old primitive godliness being taught. And so I'm real happy tonight that I got to hear you folks talking like that.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your kind comments and calling in.
I did have a question, though. I'm interested in talking about primitive godliness and the church work that went on in the area you're speaking of a moment ago. Have you ever heard of the church, the Icona Church of that area that you're speaking of?
I haven't, but maybe Pastor Stuyvesant says.
Yeah.
Is it spelled A-I-K-O-N-A or something like that?
I think it was I-C-O-N-A. It started with an I. And it was a primitive church. They fled from England and in Europe and came out to the islands you were talking about and set up some churches and went out and preached the gospel from that church called the Icona Church. And somebody told me that what was the fellow there in Ireland that they still celebrate that day and everybody wears green.
Saint Patrick.
Yeah. And I've heard some people say that even though they've made him a saint, he was actually preaching against the Catholic Church and a lot of the doctrines that they had twisted around in the wrong way.
Yes. Actually, Saint Patrick was really originally a Welshman, and adhered to this concept of a family abbey from his heritage because he was the son of a deacon and actually a grandson of a deacon as well. But I think that the church that you're talking about is actually the Icona Church.
Icona, that's it. There.
Yeah. And some of the great missionaries, Columbanus and Columba were both associated with that group and as well as a lot of other missionaries from that time. So yeah, there's a lot of rich history there, and you type in some of these names on the internet now and you're likely to come up with some titles. It used to be that there was a group in British Columbia that's sold a lot of these books. I think they were called the Covenant Ministries or something like that. Mike, maybe you can do that.
We've always sold some. We carry some books by them, but off the top of my head, I can't remember the group's name. But we do carry at least a couple books that they publish.
Yeah, I know a lot of books. We tried to carry some for quite a few years, and but a lot of books are out of print, but some of this material is still available online. So,
well, I
appreciate your encouraging words.
Yeah, well, you guys are sparking some old study that I'd done a long time ago, and I knew that these fellows had been teaching the very ideas and structure of the old way the church was done, instead of a centralized church with a pope at the top. And but there's one other question. Somebody told me that these folks, a lot of them, kept the old original Seventh-day Sabbath of the Fourth Commandment, and like our master did. And I was wondering, could you tell me where the change was? It seems to be more of a traditional and papal change rather than a biblical change that brought about the change over to Sunday. Could you help me out on that?
Well, yeah, it is true that they were Sabbatarian, and I'm thinking that it was probably the Synod of Whitby, was 664 or somewhere thereabouts, AD. That was when the change began to happen. It didn't happen all at once, but it is true that that they did follow what we would call a more Jewish, I wouldn't say the word Jewish, but more Old Testament pattern of observances in their Christian faith than what the Roman Catholics brought to them later.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to hang up and give you guys somebody else another chance. Keep up the good work, and I tell you what, I'm being entertained in a godly way tonight listening to you guys.
Well, thank you very much for your
call,
Bill. We have another caller from Moorestown, New Jersey. We'd like to welcome you. You're on the air.
Yes, am I on?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Brother Mike? I bought stuff out of your outfit in the past. I like your ministry. Hey, did you used to be with Presbytery Conference in Manhattan Beach back in the day?
This ministry is a successor ministry for Presbytery Conference ministry, which was called Your Heritage. And I've met Pastor Compre, but I never lived in the San Diego area.
Okay. About polygamy, I really don't get in that issue too much. But isn't it good, like like if ancient Israel goes through wars and stuff, and we got to repopulate quickly? Isn't it a good way to do it for repopulation, get our numbers back up, and keep like good tribal lines going?
Well, I'd agree with that. Let's hear some comments by Pastor Stivers.
Well, certainly that's a practical reality. But I think that when you read the book of Exodus, for example, the descendants of Israel or Jacob, there was about 70 of them that descended into Egypt. And within 200 or 300 years, they were over 1 million, and by the time of the Exodus, they were at least 2.5 million, and if not more. And so the demographic reality is that these people chose that custom by choice. They were not forced into that situation. They chose it for its practical advantages of developing their society. And so I think that certainly, what you're saying there is valid, and any society that fails to reproduce itself will not survive, and we're beginning to see the reality of that demographic in the United States and in Western Europe. The demographics do not favor long-term survival the way things are going right now.
And as far as, I don't know how males are concerned, it's like the top males who are the best, however God would look at the best male lineage. The more they reproduce, the more their traits or whatever are infused in the general population. I guess the weaker males would like hearing that, but the kingly line, and they're allowed to have more than one wife to increase their numbers and increase their household, right? I mean, and God don't have a problem with that, right?
Well, I think, but if I may interject there, what's important is following biblical law. We don't say that the best male is the strongest or the fastest or the smartest. We think that according to the Bible, we think that the best man is the man who is most faithful to God's commandments, and those are the men that should be propagated. So that was the idea in Israelite society, was you weeded out the men that did not want to comply with biblical law, and the men that did want to comply with biblical law were rewarded by the opportunity to work hard and to increase the size of their families through polygamy and other means.
Okay. I just want to say one other thing. While we're in the month of March, and I'm part Celtic, I heard through the racial Christian identity grapevine, the St. Patrick, he didn't expel snake reptiles out of Erie, Ireland. He expelled the Kenites, the Tubal Kenites. Do you believe that? Because I can't fathom that he drove snake reptile animals out of the island, off the island. You know what I mean? What's your take on that? And I know that's so politically incorrect to say, but I don't care.
Well, I think it is a symbolic,
It's an allegory?
Allegory, exactly, yeah.
Right, and I think the allegory of the leprechaun and the gold, I think that symbolizes the Irish regaining their economic house after the Kenite gang was expelled. We have any thoughts about that?
Well, I really haven't thought about that one, but yeah, you know, the Irish are really good for allegories, and it's certainly worth more investigation. There's a long tradition that the Irish had first been exposed to biblical faith through Jeremiah, the prophet Jeremiah. The tradition is
right.
The prophet Jeremiah went to Ireland with two of the daughters of the king of Judah, and so that would have been the first inkling that we would have. And of course, there are other legends that are, in fact, I talk about some of this in my book and some of my books.
Well, yeah, and they had the Chaldee Church way before the Catholic Khan arrived.
Absolutely.
It's too bad that the Catholic Khan prevailed, you know, but the Chaldee Church was there way before the Catholics got there. Am I right?
Yes. They were there from the very earliest times of Joseph Arimathea and the early apostles that came to Britain in the first century. And of course, they went to Ireland as well.
And like some people are going to this misconception that like the Catholic Church started right at 33 AD. They didn't really get cooking until, what, 325 AD? So wait, with Constantine? So it's like there was Christianity between, 33 AD and 325 AD, even before Catholic. But Catholic is not the end, is not the beginning. Far from it, you know what I mean? In fact, they're exposed in Alexander Hislop's The Two Babylons, as far as I'm concerned. Not that I'm a fan of fundamentalism either. That they're off the charts too. Judeo-church insanity.
Right.
I'm hardcore two-seat on Christian identity. I don't care what anybody has to say against it or not. You know what I mean? I know who's who and who's Jew. I know world Jewry is Satan. Nobody's gonna tell me otherwise. You know what I mean? The Holy Spirit, the key of David, confirms it. That's just for me. If anybody else doesn't, you know, to each their own though. You know what I mean? And everybody has their own definitions of what those terms mean. Be that as it may, thank you for taking my call, Brother Mike. I hope you stay healthy and well. And praise Yahweh and all the Israelite saints out there, the Israel elect.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your call. Appreciate your comments.
All right, later.
The comment he made about marrying the best quality men reminds me of a comment we had. Well, you can hear the rebroadcast of the broadcast the first Sunday in November with two ladies who had practiced plural marriage. But I asked them the question, would you rather marry a quality man who had other wives, or would you rather marry some jerk because that's the only thing available? And, of course, the answer was they would rather marry a quality man who they can see that a nice Christian family that they could join. Do you like to...
Well, yes, and sure. And, you know, this is part of my vision here that I'm seeing not only in the old Celtic church, but also in the Bible, is the idea that the men that aspire to have a relationship with God and with Jesus Christ, or however you want to, whether you want to call him Yahweh or Jehovah or Yahshua, we're talking about the same person here, God of our fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The unifying characteristic of these men is that they were men of the covenant. They had a personal relationship with God. And these are the kinds of people that Jesus was talking about when he said, the meek shall inherit the earth. This is what he, our Creator, wants, is men like this to fill the earth. And certainly the opportunity for plural marriage practices factors very importantly into these things. But I think what happens a lot of times when people get introduced to the idea of polygamy, which, by the way, is getting really close to being legalized in our country. We could talk about that in a few minutes if you'd like. But I think that the thing that immediately comes to mind is the lazy sheik laying on a couch with women fawning over him, waving a palm branch to keep him cool. And that's sort of the picture that people get in their mind when you talk about polygamy. And really, when you look at the kind of men that the Bible testifies to, they were hardworking men, strong principles, not always perfect by any means. But they were strong men, and they were men with a relationship with God, and that was part of their strength. That's what gave them their principles. And I think that we're going to enter a time very soon when women are going to want to be in a family that has a strong masculine leadership. I think that society is going to need to have that, and the survival of our society is going to require that as well.
I'm thinking of Isaiah 4:1, where it says, in that day, seven women shall take hold of one man. If you read the previous chapter, Isaiah 3, it's all about the breakdown of society. And then you start in Isaiah 4:2 and on, and it's the restoration of society. So I would think that polygamy is one of the things that is used to help restore the kingdom in Yahweh's patriarchal family.
Right. But of course, you really want to have people practice that custom who are spiritually motivated. And what I find very intriguing about a recent court decision, the federal court over the state of Utah, district court, just within the last few weeks, has come down with a ruling in the Cody Brown decision. And I think you might remember, or some folks listening here might remember, Cody Brown is a man that has several wives, and they do a reality show on television called Sister Wives. And they were being persecuted by the state of Utah. In fact, they had to flee the state, and that's why the court case was originated. But what the court did was, is it essentially legalized plural cohabitation. Not necessarily plural marriage, but plural cohabitation. And what I find intriguing about that decision is I believe that what that has done is it's basically narrowed the the kind of person that would be interested or be willing to pursue plural cohabitation, and that would be the person that would do it for religious principle. And that's the kind of person that you want to be interested in that sort of lifestyle, because certainly we don't want to propagate more atheists and unbelievers in the world. If people come to that conclusion on their own initiative, that's their business. But Christian folks, we want to instill our faith in our offspring and our children, and look for every opportunity to do that.
Well, you don't require, or Yahweh our God doesn't require a marriage license. That's a relatively recent development. We have a tract called the Marriage License issued by God or the state, and if any of our listeners tonight would be interested in that, I'll send you a free copy if you'll just write us and request it. Our contact information will be at the end of the broadcast, but I'd like Pastor Stivers to give his contact information.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I have an email address, and I would invite people to correspond with me if they would like. And certainly if you want to get any copies of my book, I have a PDF file that I can send to you, or a hard copy. So if you want to send me an email, I'd be happy to respond to that. My email address is churchoverseer@gmail.com. Churchoverseer is all one word, lowercase. churchoverseer@gmail.com, and I'd invite you to contact me, and I'd be happy to carry on with our conversation.
We only have a couple minutes left. Do you have any closing comments, or I think you were about to comment on the marriage license.
Yes, I think that it's really kind of complicated in some ways when you're using the word marriage, because there's so many things that have changed about the institution of marriage. It used to be considered a sacrament within the established church. Then it became a civil contract in the Protestant countries. And then today, of course, it's been expanded to, it's basically include any kind of relationship. When you look in the Bible, really the romantic concept of marriage is really not present in the Bible. The Bible is more concerned with marriage as a spiritual discipline, like prayer and all the other things that people do to become good Christians. And marriage is an opportunity for you to live with someone else and to learn how to be a good Christian and behaving Christ-like to your spouse, and then, of course, to your children. And people have lost sight of that because they look upon marriage as an opportunity for happiness. And that's their number one quest, is to find happiness. And they think that marriage is supposed to do that for them. And if it doesn't, then, of course, they want to get a divorce, and then they'll try somebody else. And I think that the whole idea of the marriage license leads people to think that something has now happened, and nothing really has happened.
We must end here because we're out of time tonight. I was going to put in a comment that marriages weren't solemnized by a priest until the time of Pope Innocent III. But I'd like to thank you for being our guest tonight, and hope to have you back in the future.
Certainly. Thank you for having me.
And I'll say goodnight to our audience, and our closing announcement will give our contact information.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message, and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening, and send a donation to cover our cost, plus help with radio time, to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.